couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you are listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, the show that refuses to lose any weight.
We don't. We in fact, we gain weight. That's our job.
I haven't gained weight in a long time. I get a lot of exercise, ladies.
Doing what?
Ladies.
Ladies? I don't know
anyway,
who you're talking to.
That can be very strenuous. Yeah. This week on our show, we've got plenty to talk about. Not plenty to have been seen, but plenty to talk about. We've got everything from morning talk shows to runaway trains to alien invasions, and we're going to talk about movies.
That's right. That's right. We've got a little bit of a noise going on in the background of the Magical Studio in the Sky. There is a child that has wandered into the...
Loose child in the studio.
Loose child in the studio.
Child in the studio.
It is currently being taken care of. We're going to put it back in the cage. We're going to sell it later. You can check on eBay. Yeah, why not?
Why do you sell the children? This is why you have so many. You just like to sell them. You're like, you use them for two reasons. One, to scapegoat you from liking bad movies. Because you're like, well, my kids liked it. Blah, blah, blah. That makes it good. And then the other one is to make money and get tax refunds.
I don't get tax. Well, yeah, tax.
You're one of those people. You're a blight.
What we do is we have the kid. We get the Social Security number. We can then deduct it on taxes. Then we can sell it and continue to deduct it off our taxes.
He's okay. Man, you're just awful. Just a bad human being. Okay. Aside from having terrible taste in movies.
Whatever.
Anyway, now that we've warmed you up, here's how you can get a hold of Fat Guys at the Movies. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and see the entire Fat Guys family of podcasts, including
something about television
and something about... I guess there's another movie show that you can listen to.
It's more a Spotlight is more sort of a theme oriented. This is more movie review.
Oh, gotcha. Different. Anyway, so you can get all that over there at fatguysatthemovies.com. Go to iTunes, search Fat Guys at the Movies, download us, think about us, dream about us, subscribe to us, and hopefully review us and say nice things.
Yes.
Someday we want to be as cool as other podcasts on iTunes. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can also leave us a voicemail, area code 740-205-6456. And you can get us on Facebook, just search Fat Guys at the Movies. Again, you just keep searching Fat Guys at the Movies everywhere you go. I'm pretty sure you'll find it. You can get us on the Twitter. Kevin's is twitter.com/KevinCarr, and mine is twitter.com/rejects. I was remembering what we are on Twitter.
Ah, that's right.
Because, you know, the Twitter is important.
That's it. That is important. It brought Conan back. So.
I guess. Well, maybe it's because Conan's just awesome.
Conan is awesome.
That he's back. Yeah, I don't know if the Twitter did it. The Twitter doesn't seem to have much power in the world.
Yeah.
It just thinks it does.
Yeah, it's kind of egotistical.
Right.
But that's what it's there for.
Yeah, exactly. So, moving on.
Can I read? We don't have viewer. We have viewer feedback in a bizarre way.
We don't have viewers
or listener feedback. Well, maybe they're view. Maybe they just stare at our pictures as they listen. That's
possible.
Oh
boy, not recommended.
It's happened before. Anyways, I did an interview earlier this week with a woman who directed a movie about post-traumatic stress disorder, and so I was doing some research on it. And, it appeared on Veterans Day on the site, and there was an article on Film School Rejects. But I put on my Facebook, I said, I'm just doing some research for an interview on Monday. And one of our longtime listeners, Jeff Hall, responded. He said, I thought your research consisted of looking up topless pictures of Jessica Alba, which there are none, by the way, after exhaustive
surgery. Wait, there are some now.
Are there some now?
Yeah, she just did the thing with the topless photos.
Oh, really? I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, but she's like pregnant, so you got to be into preggers.
I can deal with that. I'm okay.
Oh, boy.
Anyways, and so I said, who says I wasn't? And his response was, and you'll get a kick out of this, he says, my apologies for the mix-up. Your post implied you were doing research, being a longtime Fat Guy in Film School Reject fan. I was appalled at the implication, of course, of me doing real research. Then he goes, after all, what would be next? Neil Miller actually seeing this week's movies? Pshaw, sir. Pshaw. Now my question to you now is:
As it turns out, I've seen none of this week's movies.
Big shocker in Fat Guy Land.
Well, you know it's tough. It's hard out there for a pimp.
Wow.
You know,
and
so I have some trouble getting to the movies. And, you know, weeks like this where the only, you know, movie that I was even remotely interested in, yeah, sure, Unstoppable. I didn't get invited to an Unstoppable screening. I think I'm falling off the lists here.
You are? Well,
Morning
you
Glory,
don't
they
see
screened
them.
It like 14 times, but I, you know, who cares? I thought that movie came out like 3 months ago. Unstoppable, sure, I would have seen that. You know, it's got Malcolm X in it and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And Skyline was the one I wanted to see, and I was really disappointed that Universal decided not to screen it for regional critics.
They didn't screen it for anybody. Except
I guess
maybe.
They're doing a screening, you know, they did a screening on Thursday night, late night, but...
Yeah, the 10 p.m.
You know,
screening.
By then it's, you know, what are you going to do? So, yeah.
Well, the people seeing it at 10 o'clock in L.A., I'm seeing it already at midnight in Columbus.
Well, and see, that's the thing is... But, you know, beyond that, just the trailer, I was like, this movie looks awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it's got nobody in it. It's got Eric Balfour and the guy from Scrubs.
Yeah.
But
and
it looks very cool.
Dexter. It's everyone. Yeah. It's all TV actors.
It looked very cool. So I was very disappointed they didn't. I'm going to go see it this weekend.
Yeah.
So,
so am I. Well, let's talk Morning Glory.
Oh, yeah,
we'll
get to that.
We got this one. This is Rachel McAdams stars as a new executive producer of a fledgling morning show, dead last in the ratings.
So you're a fan of our morning program?
Oh, many.
Yeah, yeah, we know it's terrible.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll show you what to do with those shampoo bottles with just an inch of shampoo left. Huh.
Daybreak's understaffed, underfunded. Any producer who works there will be publicly ridiculed, overworked, underpaid. Awful.
I'll take it.
I'd like to offer you the position of co-host of Daybreak.
After the career that I've had.
So now is an excellent time for you to take up drinking.
Now, I've heard some things about this movie.
Okay, what have you heard?
It also stars Diane Keaton, Harrison Ford, correct?
Those are the people. And Ty Burrell as a foot fetishist anchor.
Interesting.
Who gets fired right off the bat.
Ty Burrell, the guy from Trading Spaces?
From Modern Family.
Oh, that guy.
No, you're thinking of Ty... No, not Ty Pennington.
Not Ty Pennington.
Good Lord. Get your TV straight, man.
Dude, I don't watch enough TV, I guess. Oh, so the guy from Modern Family. All right,
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so here's what I've heard about this movie. I've heard that it goes one of two ways. Either it's really kind of agonizing to watch, or Harrison Ford is amazing.
Ooh,
like,
I don't know if I'd say
hilarious.
That. No, no.
Oh, boy.
First of all, I would love to see a Harrison Ford versus Clint Eastwood gravelly voice-off.
Oh, boy.
Because he just talks like this. He basically plays the character he was in Extraordinary Measures. Just every character he's played other than Indiana Jones, and kind of even Indiana Jones in the last Indiana Jones, he's kind of gets in the way. In my opinion, he just gets in the way of the movie because they kind of rely on him since he's such a big star. But the real star is Rachel McAdams, and she's very charming. She's adorable. She's beautiful. Watch the trailer online because she's in her underpants in one shot, and she's got a fantastic caboose.
You're such a perv.
I am a perv.
Can't believe your
I'm
wife
just,
lets you out of the house.
Come on. Well, you know, what am I? Yeah, like I stand a chance with Rachel McAdams. You know, hey, Rach, give me a call. That's not
No, I mean, the sheer embarrassment of having having to go out of the house with you.
She doesn't acknowledge me. I have to walk 10 paces behind her. Anyways, but the whole thing is she's adorable. She sells a movie. She's a great actor. She does a fantastic job. It overstays its welcome, and just like I said, Harrison Ford just gets in the way because it's just him being the crotchety old man again, which is, I'd like to see him do something else. I mean, he's a good
right.
actor.
I'd like to see him be younger again. That would be
he
nice.
He doesn't need to be old. He doesn't need to be younger, but he doesn't have to play that old.
I'm just going to gravelly yell at you.
But
I gotcha.
Like I said, Rachel McAdams, she sells a movie. She is the reason the movie works when it does. It's cute. It's fluffy. It's a date movie.
So give us a grade.
I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
Whoa, kind of rocks. Yeah. And we're off to a good start.
Woohoo!
We'll be back in a moment. And we have returned here on Fat Guys at the Movies.
You can all rest easy now. Take it.
I know. We have not gone away from you yet. Who knows whether we'll make it through the show. We're always pretty much on death watch here.
What, of a heart attack?
Maybe.
My aorta exploded all over my computer.
I feel like even in episode 188, which is what we're recording this week, we are always right around the corner from complete destruction.
Yeah, that's very possible, yeah.
You know, and it's almost as if we are a runaway train.
Ooh.
And we don't know where the end of the tracks are.
Nice segue.
Speaking of which, the next movie we're going to talk about is Unstoppable, in which Malcolm X and Captain Kirk must stop a runaway train filled with hazardous chemicals before it derails in a populated area.
506,
what's up?
There's an unmanned train on the northbound track.
It's under power?
It's coming straight at us.
What are we worried about in terms of cargo?
8 freight cars of hazardous chemicals. We're not just talking about a train. We're talking about a missile the size of the Chrysler Building.
It gets worse.
I've got 150 students coming in on some field trip on track 16.
Train that size going that fast. Vaporize anything in front of you. The only way to stop that kind of power, grab it by the tail, gun in the opposite direction.
Before we start with a review of this, because you didn't see it, so I don't care what the heck you have to say.
I did not.
Are you aware that it's based on a true story from Northern Ohio?
I did not.
Yeah, the actual true story, which happened, I think, in 2001, took place in Northern Ohio. For some reason, they moved it to Pennsylvania. They shot part of it in Ohio. They used the Ohio Film Commission. But yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was right around your neck of the woods, too, because you grew up in Cleveland. Right. Yeah.
I did. I grew up in Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of just went across Northern Ohio, but it's in Pennsylvania for this one. Are you a big Tony Scott fan?
Tony Scott definitely makes movies that have a lot of cuts in them.
But you don't like you're not like, because I know, like, for example, if you turn talk action directors, you know, Michael Bay. I know you have a almost unhealthy adoration for Michael Bay.
You know, Tony Scott's never bothered me, I guess.
But he's not like he's not like Michael Bay could be, you know, Chewbacca on a toilet for 2 hours and you'd watch it.
Not necessarily. Michael Bay just I expect a certain thing from Michael Bay and he always gives it to me.
Okay. And it's usually not Chewbacca on the toilet. So that
no, it's not Chewbacca on the toilet. You know, and Tony Scott, Tony Scott, here's the difference between Michael Bay and Tony Scott is that Michael Bay makes similar movies, but not the same movie every time.
Okay.
You know, sure, he's made a couple Transformers movies, but you know, you go from stuff like Bad Boys to Pearl Harbor sure, they're similar in his style. His style does not change, but the movies that he's trying to make are different. You know, they're all action movies, but they're all... Tony Scott, I feel like he's gotten into this rut where he keeps making the same movie, like, every time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always Denzel Washington movie, you know? So I feel like that's what makes Tony Scott less interesting to me now than Tony Scott was, like, in the early 90s when he was making some really cool movies, you know?
Well, see, what's funny is 80s movies I was never a fan of. I didn't like Days of Thunder. I thought Top Gun was overrated.
I love his 80s stuff.
His 90s, it's sort of like he peaked. I mean, I thought like Crimson Tide was really good. Enemy of the State was really good. And then even as he got into the 2000s, I thought, you know, Man on Fire, I thought was a really well done movie. But you can even see it from a visual style. He's a very visual director. And the only thing that really bothers me about him, and this dovetails into the movie, is his own style gets in his way. And when he doesn't have a story at all, like Domino, it's an absolute disaster because all it is style. There's nothing else to it. Unstoppable has a story there, but it's got about 45 minutes of a story, and the rest of it is kind of padded out by making it more and more ludicrous. I mean, as they set up the story, you know, they're there, and it's the train, and you know the train's going to get on the tracks, you know it's going to start rolling without an engineer, and then they're just like, oh, wait, it's rolling, and they can't stop it, and there's hazardous chemicals on board, and there's a trainload of kids, and it's going into a town, and there's a little puppy on the track. I mean, I kept waiting for the most ludicrous thing to happen. It just kind of goes a little too far, which you need a little bit of ridiculousness for an action movie anyways.
Right.
But it does go a little bit, it lays it on a bit thick.
Right. And I mean, to be honest with you, it sounds about right for Tony Scott.
Yeah.
I feel like he's lost his touch feature film-wise.
Well, and the thing is, and here's a great example, and what's interesting, as I saw David Chen made the exact same point that I was saying to somebody because I saw him on Twitter talking about it. 70% of the movie, or 70% of the time you see Denzel Washington and Chris Pine, they're in a train. And not like in a big train. They're in the cockpit of the train or whatever the engine car of the train. And so instead of finding a way to make it interesting, he like mounts the camera on the front of the train and then just spins the camera around. And it's a cool shot once.
Right.
But he does it like, at one point he
it's
does
like
it.
In Deja Vu where he does the, like the quick cut, like pew, pew,
pew, pew. Well, but he does, it's the same move.
Like nine times.
Three times in a row. And then like at the end, there's like this, at the there's a helicopter shot zipping by something and it just goes zip and then zip. And you're just like, why? You know, it'd be like somebody eating breakfast and a helicopter zipping by them eating breakfast. It's kind of a relatively...
Actually, that'd be really funny.
Well, and that's the point. He reuses his shot style and his shots. And, you know, on the level, it looks good. But it's almost like there's so much style, it's like trying to cover stuff up. And if you would just kind of just chill out a little bit, it would have been a better movie. It's still a button pusher. I mean, it's a crowd pleaser. You know, it's an action movie. It's like 90 some minutes long, so you're in and you're out. It's not this bloated 2.5 hour thing or anything like that.
Right.
So, and there's a lot of shots of people watching television in the movie.
Can I tell you what my favorite Tony Scott thing from the last 5 years has been? That Andromeda Strain TV series that he produced.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
All of his movies were kind of boring, though. Yeah. Taken of Pelham 1-2-3, boring.
Well, but it's way...
So this is, if this falls in line with his current stuff, I'm not interested.
It's better than. I'd say it's better than. It's sort of like Crimson Tide on a train. It's better than Pelham 1-2-3. Pelham 1-2-3 had some serious problems with it. It's more exciting and a little more straightforward. But like I said, it does kind of get... It does reach ludicrous speed at a certain point.
Ludicrous speed.
And what's funny is if you go back and if you actually look up the real story, because the train looks like going, it's going 70 miles an hour. And then they have shots of it going through towns. And well, since it's a real train going through real towns, they can't fling the train through a real town at 70. So it's going, it's like, you're like watching it going, that must be reaching speeds of 25 miles an hour. as it's going ding, 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 ding across the tracks. So, and that's just the nature of shooting. And then finally, the whole point is the real train, the top speed of the real train, that was 47 miles an hour. So,
that's breakneck speed.
It does sort of Hollywood it up.
That's heavy duty in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, especially if it's unmanned.
So. Yeah, that's true. All right. So, grade.
I'm going to say, you know what? It's right on the edge. I'm going to say kind of rocks simply for the spectacle and audience excitement of it, but it's not it's just barely a kind of rocks.
Okay. Sweet. So let's move on to the final movie, a movie that we can't really review because somebody Universal was afraid to show it to critics. Even critics in LA didn't see it. This is heavy.
Well, they're
going to
get killed by aliens, so what the heck do they care?
Right. The movie is called Skyline. It's about aliens who invade Los Angeles, and a bunch of TV actors fight to save the day.
Stephen Hawking, astrophysicist and arguably one of the smartest people on the planet, warned us about the possibility of aliens from outer space.
Hawking says that if extraterrestrials visit us, the outcome might be similar to when Columbus landed in America. In other words, it didn't turn out too well for Native Americans.
This movie is not about Chile.
Right. It's
not about Skyline,
wow.
Chile.
There's like 10 people in the world who are going to get that joke.
It's so high.
However, let me say this. Promotionally, this movie's looked really cool.
I'm excited for
really
it.
Cool. Some of the trailer shots, and, you know, I could be way off a lot of times. The trailer gets, like, the 5 best shots in the movie.
Yeah.
But some of the trailer shots in this movie are awesome. Yeah. You know, and I'm a sucker for alien invasion movies. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for mass panic movies. Mm-hmm. Going all the way back to stuff like in the 50s and when that was kind of the height of world panic stuff.
Yeah.
But so I'm target audience for this. So it'll be interesting to see it. Because it looks interesting. I think a smaller cast is interesting to me. The fact that they didn't try and get anybody big for it. Sure, it's directed by the guys who did Alien vs. Predator, so that doesn't really bode well. But, it could be. It could very well be good.
Well, but the other thing is it was done. This is what I think is so impressive about it, having seen the trailer and seeing the trailer in the theater, too, not just online. It looks damn impressive. And Right. It's like budget's like $10-15 million, which I'm like, that's impressive if you can pull that off. So let's see if all the dots get connected.
Yeah, I feel like we'll revisit it next week if we both see it.
We have to give it a preemptive suck, but off to a break.
And we have to come back from a break here in a moment.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
Before we go on, because first of all, welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. I got a little ahead of myself there.
Just in case you forgot where you are.
Yeah, because, that 30 seconds is going to really mess you up in the head. Before we move on to box office, actually, it sort of dovetails into box office. I actually have a bet going on with Merrill Barr, the co-host of The Idiot Boxers, in relation to Unstoppable and Skyline. We made a bet as to which movie would do better opening weekend. And I was, of course, I have to throw my support behind Skyline because even though it has no names behind it and they didn't screen it, I would love to see it do well. And then he's throwing it behind Tony Scott because... Well, he's a Tony Scott whore, and that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. But the bet is, in relation to the show Glee, whoever loses gets a slushy in the face.
All right.
So
take a slushy in the face.
If you want to see me to get a slushy in the face, my flavor of choice, of course, but if you want to see me get a slushy in the face, go see Unstoppable this weekend. And if you want to see Meryl get a slushy in the face, go see Skyline 5 or 6 times.
And gotcha.
Yeah. So, last week, Megamind did well. Megamind. Hello, are you still with us?
Yep.
Mr. Miller?
I was doing background music.
Oh, was that what that was?
Yep.
I thought you were had to pee.
Anyway, Megamind pulled it out with $46 million last weekend.
Which was right on target. Well, did you hear about the whole mistake that they had? It was originally reported low, and they were thinking it was going to be like barely cracking $40
million. Right.
But apparently, did you hear about this? No. Apparently, AMC's ticketing system wasn't reporting it. So, like, a whole bunch of the shows that were taking place at AMC theaters were not getting reported. So by the end of the weekend, they were like, oh, no, it was much more on Friday. Mm. The Friday numbers were really soft.
Yeah.
But it did well. You didn't happen to see this, did you?
What?
Megamind.
No.
No. You don't.
I heard it was okay.
It's awesome. It was fun.
Due date, $32 million, which I think is kind of impressive. It's solid.
Actually, that's better than I was expecting.
Yeah, it's a movie that, Warner Brothers spent $65 million to make.
They spent $65 million on Due Date?
That is their reported budget.
Where did that money go?
I have no idea. Megamind cost $130. Jeez.
So basically, Due Date cost half the money that Megamind did.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. Did it all go up Robert Downey Jr.'s nose?
I don't think so. I don't think he's into that anymore. However, Zach Galifianakis, possibly. And then for Colored Girls, finished
third. I think if it went anywhere for Zach Galifianakis, it probably ate it.
Right.
Because he's his fellow fat guy.
For Colored Girls, finished third, $19 million. Made almost its entire budget in its first week. So Tyler Perry continues to be financially successful with his movies.
Although this was pretty soft for a Tyler Perry movie.
That's true, but it was also made pretty cheap for a Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah, true.
So
no, I mean, not nothing to take it away from, but the point is that. But the reason I think it had a bit of a dip is it doesn't have the Madea raucous comedy aspect.
Right. And it's actually serious. Expect.
And it's got Whoopi Goldberg in it, and I think there's a lot of people who saw Homer and Eddie and was like, "Yeah, none of that." You ever see Homer and Eddie?
No. I will say this.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I couldn't hear you there for a second.
Homer and Eddie just made me want to shut up. Anyway.
Yeah, Homer and Eddie's a bad movie.
I will say this. Two things I like about this box office. One, Saw dropped down to number 5. 65% drop. Good for Saw. And then number 4, Red. Red staying in there is a very successful movie for Summit. Now at $71 million domestic on a $58 million budget. Here's what this means. This means that Summit, who is famous for Twilight and has this big cash cow of Twilight still rolling in, is going to if they're having success with these movies, these kind of what I call them, their alternate programming movies,
yeah,
they're going to continue to make them. And they're a kind of studio, a mid-level studio that's making some really cool stuff. You know, like Red, they're doing Drive Angry with Nicolas Cage. They've got a lot of stuff that they could do that's not Twilight, and I think that's very cool that they're having success with these movies too.
They're what Lionsgate was about 6 or 7
years ago. Right, and they've done some interesting stuff. Like even like Sex Drive. Sex Drive was awesome. A lot of people didn't see it, but
it did not do well.
You know, for them to put money into stuff like that and continue to take chances, I think they're one of those studios that's actually primed to take chances where, you know, whereas everyone else seems to still be playing it very safe.
Well, I am glad that Summit is doing well with Red, because nothing else outside of the Twilight Real House has done well at all. I mean, they've had stuff like Furry Vengeance, which was awful. They had that Robert Pattinson Remember Me, but they're going to took that up to Robert Pattinson being in it. There was but they did, what was that one with Christina Ricci, is the dog, the pig face girl?
Penelope
everything else is Sex Drive bombed. I mean, they've done some good movies that just nobody cares about.
So it'll be interesting to see how well Drive Angry does, and I think, you know, they might be catching a stride, which I think is very cool, especially, you know, for those of us who aren't, I mean, Twilight's fine. I don't have a problem with Twilight. It serves its audience.
That's where you go to pick up chicks.
I mean, Twilight's whatever. But for those of us who want to see them, because they're a cool studio, they're doing stuff that's interesting. Yeah. I'd like to see them continue. So good for them, for Red, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, more power to them. All right, moving on to this week. So you're, are we with the whole slushy face thing? Are we, you're committing to Skyline?
I'd like to see Skyline beat Unstoppable, but the conventional wisdom says Megamind's going to win again.
That, you know, I wouldn't put it past it, because really it's, you know,
it could drop 50% and it's still going to be in the high 20s.
Right, and I think both of the movies that are kind of out there, Skyline and Unstoppable, are going to open soft.
I think.
I'm sorry, Universal, you just cannot open anything big this year.
Yeah, that's part of the curse. But also the thing with Unstoppable is the sense I get from other people I've talked to, and this pisses off fans of Tony Scott, you know, like my co-host Meryl Barr, is when everyone's just like, another freaking train movie with Tony Scott and Denzel Washington. And it's funny, if you look at the posters, you should look at the posters side by side. They're virtually the same freaking poster.
Right.
And Unstoppable's far and gone better than Pelham 1-2-3.
Right.
But I think a lot of people are like going, didn't we see this last year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's going to be, I think, people who are going to be like, wasn't this just in the, and even think they're the same movie that's being re-released. So I think that's going to work against it, as opposed to if he came out with Pelham 1-2-3 like 6 years ago and then did Unstoppable with like 4 or 5 movies in between.
Right.
So I think, like I said, it's a crowd pleaser, but I just don't see. Also, Denzel will bring out a certain percentage of the audience, but he's not like a Will Smith. He's not like, you know, what Tom Cruise was back in the day, where he's not what Denzel Washington was back in the day, you know, just wherever, you know, he was the leading man. And Chris Pine, I don't think, has the gravitas as a leading man yet.
Mm.
He had Star Trek, but people are just going to be, hey, this Captain Kirk.
Right.
So.
Nice.
And no one's going to go see it because Kevin Dunn's in it. Kevin Dunn plays the evil corporate dude. I need to go see that. So what are your predictions? You think Megamind, Unstoppable?
I think Megamind, yeah, you know. I think if any of these movies has a chance of beating Megamind, it's Skyline.
Beating Megamind?
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see
Skyline.
If
any of the new movies have a chance of winning this weekend, it's Skyline.
I'd love to see Skyline do $30 million. I fear that the excitement isn't there. But boy, are they advertising the hell out of this thing.
That's why I'm thinking it could happen. You know, because it feels like kind of a blockbuster, you know, and we're in that non-blockbustery, you know.
Yeah.
People are kind of itching for something interesting to go see. So Skyline could very well work.
Go see Skyline and let Meryl Barr get a slushy in the face.
Yay, slushies. Yeah. All right, time to move on to a very special Fat Guy 5.
That's right.
And as many of you know, this week, Dino De Laurentiis passed away. Kevin, would you like to
say
something?
I mean, he was like 91, so I mean, it wasn't like this wasn't Brittany Murphy.
So Kevin, tell us about Dino De Laurentiis.
Dino De Laurentiis is a film producer, and he's also the grandfather of, what's her name, Giada De Laurentiis, the girl on the cooking channel, the other hot one.
No idea.
Well, there's Rachel Ray, who's cute, and then there's Giara. I don't know how to say her name, but she's you'd recognize her. But he's most known for films. He's been a producer for many, many years, and he produced Serpico and stuff like that. But he also was kind of like, by the time the 80s hit, he produced a lot of just cheesy ass movies, and I mean, but they were awesome in that 80s cheese sort of way. So I always remember him as kind of putting Stephen King on the map, movie wise. Not Brian De Palma with Carrie, but it was all like Cat's Eye and Maximum Overdrive and all that kind of stuff. And so if there was a cheesy sci-fi horror movie, he was like the Roger Corman with a bigger budget to get it into bigger theaters. And that's right. How I will always remember him.
So we're going to run down, at this point it's going to be about 8, but we have the 5 favorite Dino De Laurentiis movies. And I think I'm just going to let you read all 5 of these and I'll just comment on them, because this is kind of a list you put together, being the resident old guy on the show.
and with my love of Dino De Laurentiis. Of course, the first one is Dune. We have to say Dune, because this was a travesty of filmmaking. David Lynch got all messed up in it. Frank Herbert was all messed up in it. And I love Dune. It recently got a Blu-ray release. And I love this movie. And it's sort of like...
It's all kinds of crazy.
It's nuts. It is batshit crazy, but it's a great movie.
Did you know that in the timeline of science fiction cinema, Dune is the furthest in the future we've ever envisioned?
Really?
Yes.
22491 or something like that, with the Palashad Emperor, Shaddam the Fourth.
No, it's like 4400 or something like that.
It's in the double-digit thousands. It's like the 23rd... It's like the 200th century. I mean, it's way in the future.
Yeah, it's the furthest in the future of like any movie.
Really?
You know, I saw a timeline once where it's just like, awesome. You know, you have Star Wars, which is that ambiguous long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and then you have like Dune, which is like way in the future. So.
Wow.
There's that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then it was also, speaking of batshit crazy, Flash Garden. Mm-hmm. His little big screen live adaptation of Flash Gordon is so redonkulous now. It's got Queen doing the soundtrack. It's got, you know, Brian Blessed in like a codpiece and wings.
Right.
It's got Topol as Hans Zarkov. It's got Ming the Merciless played by Max von Sydow. I mean, it is this fever dream of drug-induced 80s culture. But it is so awesome to watch. Again, recently got a Blu-ray release.
Yes, and it's awesome on Blu-ray.
It is so awesome on Blu-ray. And I remember watching this as a kid. My favorite part is when Flash is fighting people, and then suddenly Melody Anderson, she starts dancing around, singing, like cheering him on because he was a football player. Which isn't that far, because he was like a polo player in the original comic strip. But anyways, he did Flash Gordon. The next one on the list, Silver Bullet, which is a Stephen King film, one of my favorite Stephen King, Dino De Laurentiis movies, based on Cycle of the Werewolf. It's got Everett McGill as a werewolf and a very young Corey Haim as the kid in the wheelchair, and a not-so-drug ripped apart Gary Busey playing his crazy uncle.
Word.
You don't have anything else to say about
Silver Bullet. Nope, I got
nothing. There's also Blue Velvet, another David Lynch movie on the list. This is this is a fantastic movie, and it's just bizarre as hell. Not as bizarre now. I mean, there's been a lot of weird shit thrown out in the theaters since the 80s. But yeah, Blue Velvet helped put Kyle MacLachlan on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And the final one of the 5, Army of Darkness.
Oh, yes. You primitive screwheads.
Yes, this is my boomstick. So, all these.
God, it's such a wild movie.
He had his hands in everything. And, you know, here, interesting story is he originally produced Manhunter, which was based on Red Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't do well. So when it came time to do Silence of the Lambs, he passed on it. And yeah, everybody else did it and did very well. And then when they came time and they go, hey, let's do Hannibal, he's like, oh, hold on a second. I get first right of refusal. And so he ended up producing that, and he produced Hannibal Rising, which was like one of his last films.
Nice.
A couple honorable mentions. You've got Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. You got to give some homage to the John Carpenter-inspired film and Tom Atkins' stash, since it is Movember.
Faux show.
Speaking of stashes, you got Serpico. Well, he has a beard, too.
But. Serpico is no-shave November style.
That's true. And Serpico is one of those that's like that almost doesn't belong on the list because you're like, whoa, that was actually like a really quality film.
Yeah, but it's kind of crazy in its own way. Nice.
And speaking of crazy in its own way, Barbarella. Gotta love Barbarella for plastic tits on the screen with Jane Fonda, you know. And Marcel Marceau in a speaking role.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, rest in peace, Dino De Laurentiis.
Indeed, R.I.P. And with that, this segment is about to be deceased. We're going to go to a break. And we are wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. One more segment to go. We'll make it a quick one, I promise. And we've got some DVDs to talk about, right?
That's right.
Is it time for the world famous DVD roundup? Sweet. So I'll go first.
Yes.
I got some stuff to talk about.
All right, you go. Make it quick.
Let's see. Scott Pilgrim came out this week. The movie that none of you supported. And this is probably the reason why.
I know a lot of people who saw it 4 or 5 times. It's just not a whole lot of people did.
Man. Anyway, good movie. Really great Blu-ray release. One of the things that we notice about Edgar Wright is that for some reason all of his movies come out with like a stupid release, like where there's nothing on it, and then later with a special edition, he's like the Peter Jackson of making funny movies.
Yeah.
And this one feels like they skipped right to the special edition, which is nice.
That's awesome. It is a great little Blu-ray set. So
yeah. Also, Antichrist came out on Criterion Blu-ray. This is probably one of the most visually striking films that you will watch all year. It's very hard to watch, and it is a very challenging experience because it deals with some stuff that you wouldn't expect in a movie.
Yeah.
And it's punishing, but it's a very interesting film, and it's a very cool-looking film.
Awesome.
And, there's mutilation and stuff, so...
Awesome.
You should watch it.
Love mutilation.
Anyway, moving on. 2TV, both BBC, Doctor Who, Season 5, the complete 5th series. Absolutely fantastic. I love Matt Smith.
Matt Smith.
And Karen Gillan.
Really,
they are just
steps
great
up the plate,
on screen together. And this season, it gets a little slow in the middle, but man, it finishes hard.
They have some really good ones.
One of the best closing episodes.
They bring back the Weeping Angels. You know, they've got River Song back in there. They got vampires.
Yep.
They literally go back to the Big Bang. So it is an awesome. It's an awesome way to introduce Matt Smith and an awesome way to put Stephen Moffat in charge instead of Russell
Davis. Right, and I love the first episode. The end of the first episode where he just like comes out. He's like, I'm the Doctor.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's very cool.
Yes.
So that's definitely something you should pick up, especially if you have any interest in Doctor Who. Here's one for everybody. Mm. Now, Guy Ritchie came out with a Sherlock Holmes movie, which I enjoyed. Mm. It was fun. But the Sherlock Season 1 miniseries, essentially it's a miniseries,
basically
three 90-minute episodes.
Yeah.
Okay. It is one of the most fantastic detective stories I have seen. It is like it is like CSI meets Beautiful Mind meets Crazy Town, sociopath Sherlock Holmes. It's got 2 stars. Martin Freeman, who plays Watson, who you'll recognize from Hitchhiker's Guide and
The Office.
Is the new Bilbo Baggins in The Office. Mm-hmm. And Benedict Cumberbatch, who's brand new, who reminds me so much of a young Alan Rickman. He's got this deep, booming voice. And he plays the part of Sherlock Holmes to be so just, like, legitimately insane.
Yeah. See, I just got this, like, literally today. And
right.
I'm very excited to watch it.
You should be, because he plays it, when you think about Holmes, Sherlock Holmes, he's the different kind of crazy. He's crazy because he's so intelligent.
Yeah.
Like, the intelligence drives him to be so socially awkward and just so arrogant, and he just doesn't understand how people can be stupid. and that is played so well in this miniseries, and some of the mysteries that they weave in these three episodes are really great. Awesome. So, highly recommend Sherlock.
The ones I want to recommend here, we've got Lie to Me Season 2, which is the TV show with Tim Roth as a behavioral analyst. It's okay. It's an okay little detective story. And it's got some decent stories. It's also got some hot ladies in it. Ramona and Beezus for the kids. I mean, this is actually cute. So I used to read the Beverly Cleary books as a kid. So this is kind of nice. It's actually loaded with special features if you get the Blu-ray and the double disc DVD. Ocean's 11, the original with Frankie.
Yeah,
I
was a little disappointed in that one.
No, it's out on Blu-ray. So it's what's funny is it's in black and white, but of course on the back it's all colorized pictures. Bizarre.
Yeah, the Blu-ray, I don't know, the Blu-ray just didn't look that great to me.
Yeah. The Chronicles of Narnia, the original, the, well, not the original, but the BBC series that they did back in, what was it, the late 90s or late 80s, which includes Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, The Voyage of the Dawn Trader, and The Silver Chair. That's out in a box set from the BBC. And a couple of older releases I want to kind of just give a little shout out to. We've got the Peanuts Holiday Collection is on Blu-ray. It's the exact same thing that was on the DVD selection that came out, I think, a year or two ago, but it's on Blu-ray. The Pumpkin, the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, and Charlie Brown Christmas. There's also, I just recently got, because it was delayed, was Elf, the Collector's Tin, which includes the movie. It has stickers. It's got tags.
Ooh, stickers.
It's got tags for your Christmas stocking or for Christmas gifts. It's got a soundtrack sampler and it's got a stocking in it, a 14-inch stocking in a little tin, which is awesome.
Nice.
From the director of Iron Man. And then finally, I just want to give a little shout out to the I'm finally making it through because it takes like weeks to watch the Alien Blu-ray set, which
oh god.
I mean, I got
amazing.
But it's taking me forever because there's I think there's something like the advertising even on the set, like 50 or 60 hours of additional features. That's not usually when they say that. That includes like commentaries. I don't even think that includes the commentaries.
Right.
That's
actually there.
There's two versions of every movie. Each version has a commentary. It is so ridiculous. You could start now and watch it. And won't be done by Christmas. Anyways, we got to go.
Nice.
Singer of the week, Charlie St. Cloud. What a terrible Hallmark movie.
Right, and Grown Ups also terrible. So, wrapping up reviews, Skyline we didn't see, so that gets preemptive suck. Unstoppable, you said.
Both Unstoppable and Morning Glory kind of rocks.
Next week we've got Harry Potter. We'll see you then. Yeah. Let's beat the bitch.
I'm rolling. Are you rolling?
I'm rolling.
Am I going to get this wonderful porn soundtrack in the background?
Bounce, bounce. Bounce, 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 bounce. Bounce, 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 bounce. Anybody order a pizza? Bounce, bounce, bounce. Bounce, 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 bounce.
I'm just seeing how long you take that.
I'll keep going.
Okay.